Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and it's Friday, so let's jump right into our week in review, beginning, sadly, with yet another school shooting. This one early this morning outside of Houston, Texas, which left at least 10 people dead, most of them students. A suspect is in custody. He's been identified as a student at the Santa Fe High School. Police are questioning another student after finding multiple explosive devices on and off the campus. Paige Curry is a student at the high school. She described what it was like when she first heard the gunshots.
Well, I was in the theater room, and it was down the art hall. I heard 4, maybe 5 shots. I didn't know what they were at first, but then I started hearing screaming. So I got up and I ran, and we hid in backstage in the workshop, and we were there for like 30 minutes or so until they found us and escorted us out.
President Trump spoke about the tragedy from the East Room of the White House earlier today, saying this has been going on too long in our country, too many years, too many decades now.
My administration is determined to do everything in our power to protect our students, secure our schools, and to keep weapons out of the hands of those who pose a threat to themselves and to others.
Okay, another school shooting, this one outside of Houston, Texas. And with me now is Susan Tracy, president of the Democratic consulting firm, The Strategy Group, and a former state rep. Susan, thanks for coming in. Always good to have you.
Thanks, Anthony.
Also with us this week is Charlie Chippio, senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute and head of Chippio Strategies. Charlie, great to have you back as well.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk first about this terrible story out of Texas. And it's almost hard to ask the question because what can we say other than here we are again? Susan, what are you thinking about?
You know, it's funny. I was talking to my colleague Dave at work when this happened, and he said, "Have you seen The Onion today?" And I said, "No, I haven't seen it." And he said, "Take a look at it. They do this every time there's a shooting." And it reads, "No way to prevent this, says only nation where this regularly happens."
Oh, boy.
Yeah. You know,
doesn't that sum it up?
It's perfect. And it's funny that you say that because what I thought about when I heard about it was I had just read, in the last week, the story about how, you know, for the first time in a million years, they had a shooting in Australia, in some remote part of Australia, you know, and compare that to what a big story it is because it never happens with this craziness.
Well, it did happen in Australia, and they really cracked down, and they decided it was something worth doing something about.
Well, let's hear a little more tape. Here's Paige Curry. She's a student at the school talking in an interview that she wasn't actually surprised that this happened. Here's what she said.
I was ready to. I was thinking it was going to happen eventually. It happens. It's been happening everywhere. I was ready to run out, but my teacher told me to hide instead, so that's what I did.
So this is pretty powerful stuff. When students are like, yeah, well, we thought this was going to happen, right?
You bet. I have two students and two kids in high school, so
me too.
You hate to think of right. You too hate to think that that's how they feel when they go to school every day.
Yeah, I think any parent with kids in any school thinks about this. So we heard President Trump talking about his administration being determined to do everything in his power to protect the students. Now, these comments come a month after he vowed to take action on school safety following the terrible shooting at the Marjory Stoneham Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Not a whole lot has happened at the federal level. Charlie Chippio, what's it going to take? Do you think that something will happen?
I'm pretty pessimistic at this point. I mean, I just compare what President Trump said after the Florida shooting. And then fast forward, a couple of months, and just very recently, he's speaking in front of the NRA, you know, saying exactly the opposite. You know, so today he says, well, my administration will do anything necessary. Well, you know, anything necessary short of, of challenging the NRA, it sounds like.
Well, interesting, though, Susan, you know, after the shooting at Marjory Stoneham Douglas, we saw this enormous wave of student activism sort of take off and make some significant difference in many ways. Do you think this is going to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I too am pessimistic. I always felt if we didn't do anything after Sandy Hook, it was hard to imagine when we would. That said, I think if the kids from Parkland can do what they talk about, which is register to vote, go out to the polls, I think if people can become somewhat single-issue voters on this issue, and people who are in government feel that their jobs are at stake if they don't do something, that's the only way it's going
to
change.
Right. I hate to turn this into strategy, but it is interesting that this latest Houston area shooting, I mean, again, this is high school students. This is people who, and the kids from Parkland were unbelievable in how poised and, you know, how just the way they conducted themselves. And, you know, once again, this is not Sandy Hook in the sense that it's 6 and 7 year olds who can't really say anything. You know, hopefully, you know, folks at this school will do the same thing and they'll be able to really use their voices.
All right. Well, our hearts, of course, go out to the families down there in Houston, Texas. Just a terrible tragedy once again. So let's move on to maybe less tragic news and to local politics here. And I want to talk about yesterday's debate between the two Democratic candidates for governor, environmental activist Bob Massey, former state budget chief Jay Gonzalez. WBUR hosted the forum along with the Boston Globe and UMass Boston. The two Democrats mostly agreed with each other. They took turns mostly beating up on the guy who wasn't in the room, Governor Charlie Baker. So here's Jay Gonzalez.
But we're not leading under Charlie Baker. He's a status quo, wait-and-see governor, and it's not good enough. We need a governor who is going to see the way the world should be and take us to that place. Let's aim high.
And here's Bob Massey dinging the governor for being unwilling to make big investments in things like transportation.
We know that we are starting to fall behind. I'd like to buy Charlie a ticket to some part of the world which is competing with us, where they have built a modern high-speed rail system that we could have over the next 10 years if we committed to it, if we had the leadership.
So the Democrats have been struggling for traction in this race against the most popular governor in America. So yesterday might have been their best opportunity yet for some much-needed visibility. Susan, what did you take away from that debate? Did it move the dial at all in this campaign? What did you hear?
Well, I think you just said it best. I think it was important to both of them because they finally get some traction. They finally get some attention. You know, I think you're just plodding along out there and, you know, no one's paying attention to you. No one knows what you're doing. So hopefully that ignites some kind of a fire on this race. The other thing that I do think is helpful is that there are only two candidates. I think it becomes an easier race to cover for folks like you. Mm-hmm. I think those big fields, you see that up in the, you know, congressional district, district three. I think the big fields are hard to cover. I think it does give them an opportunity to sort of be head-to-head and try to stand out in that.
Yeah. What do you think, Charlie? What did you hear yesterday?
Well, I mean, there's what I heard from a policy point of view and a political point of view. Politically, I think it's going to come down to a race of two people who largely agree on the issues, but, you know, the insider and the outsider kind of thing. And one's going to argue experience, the other is going to argue leadership, which we see all the time. I have to confess that I have a bee in my bonnet about this one because I find it I talk about politics all the time, and sometimes races like this happen that make me believe that I just don't know anything about it, because every time I hear a comment in this race, anytime I watch any of this stuff, I think, okay, Jay Gonzalez, no one has been I mean, Jay's tone, you know, in attacking the governor has been very self-righteous and, you know, and it just astonishes me. I keep stepping back and saying, okay, this is the guy who headed the organization that oversaw the collapse of the Connector website, which cost the Commonwealth more than $1 billion. And had there be just anybody who applied for MassHealth was accepted. And it's like, how do you do that? Do you think no one's going to catch that? It just astonishes me.
Susan, do you see that as a big Achilles heel for Jay Gonzalez?
You know, I think every candidate in this race probably has an Achilles heel that one can point to. I think if you're Jay Gonzalez, you point to Charlie Baker and say, You did the big dig, and you hurt us financially significantly by fiscal maneuvers you made at that time to offload things to the future. So I think everyone's going to have some Achilles heel in this race. I do think, you know, talking a little bit more strategically than politically, I think everybody feels like Charlie Baker is really popular. His money advantage is so wildly significant.
Staggering,
I mean, it's like $8 million to, I don't know, $114,000.
Right,
we're talking
right.
that level. But I think one thing that is interesting about this race is November of 2018. I just think that none of us can predict what the climate is going to be like. That is the first post-Trump election. It is a time when there are going to be ballot questions that I think are pretty favorable to the progressive community. You know, potentially a millionaire's tax, fair wages, nurses, ballot questions. So there's stuff on there that I think will draw people out. Big race up in the 3rd Congressional District. So there's just a lot going on, and I think a feeling of real frustration. So I don't think this race is as over as some people think it is.
Yeah, I would have a really hard time saying it's over with all of this time we have between now and election day. But what do you think, Charlie?
No, I agree with that, actually. I think that, look, you have to say Charlie Baker's the favorite at this point. But, you know, between the things that Susan just mentioned, which I think are very real, and the fact that it is always a narrow path for a Republican in Massachusetts, I don't think it's over.
Yeah, interesting. Well, the only disagreement between these two Democrats really was when they were asked which one of them is best suited to take on Baker. So Gonzalez says he's the guy because he's got the right experience. Here's a bit of what he said.
I'm the only one of the two of us that has leadership experience in state government getting big things done. I was Governor Patrick's Secretary of Administration and Finance, not only oversaw the state budget, but was often his point person for negotiating a lot of the big things we got through the legislature during that time. I've been there. I've done it. I know how the process works, and it is unlike any other place. And I think that should matter because I think I'm best positioned to deliver on that type of agenda we need.
So that was Jay Gonzalez, and here's Bob Massey casting himself, Charlie, as you mentioned, as the outsider with the big ideas to shake things up and a contrast to Gonzalez's insider status.
I do not think that someone who says, hey, Charlie, you were ANF director, I was ANF director, you were head of a healthcare company, I was head of a for-profit healthcare company, I don't think that's going to move anybody. What people want is a fresh start, a fresh voice, someone who has a deep understanding of what people at the grassroots in places like Somerville are feeling and in the communities and across the country and the world. We need to compete in the world.
So what do you think, Susan, this insider-outsider divide, is that the way it's going to sort of shake down between these two guys?
I do think so. Sure. This is not going to be a race about issues, right? They're kind of all in the same place on the issues. Their priorities on issues might be a little bit different, you know, kind of how they rank them. If you ask them to, you know, kind of put them in a 1-2-3 order, we might find it a little bit different. But I do. I think it's going to be a race that's about style. Whose style do you like? Who do you, you know, who do the vast majority of Democratic voters who come out the day after Labor Day to vote think represents the style that they want? Is it, you know, the outsider kind of feisty Bernie Sanders type, or is it a more, you know, Obama, Hillary Clinton, Patrick-like, you know, get things done experienced? I think we'll find out on September 4th.
Yeah. And I think in the primary anyway, I think given especially the way the sort of the tone right now and the tenor and the way that state Democratic Party is really moving left, I think that I mean, my sense is that Massey might be better positioned than Gonzalez, but we'll see.
Interesting. Well, plenty of time to sort through this in the weeks and months ahead. Let's talk. I want to move on and talk about another story. The big Supreme Court ruling this week, striking down a 1992 federal law blocking most states from legalized sports betting. Soon, it'll be out with the bookies, in with the websites and casinos looking to get in on the game. States hope to cash in on it as well. Here's Governor Charlie Baker on Monday after the high court's decision.
I would say it's certainly something we should look at. I promise you that the vast majority of the states around the country will certainly take a look at it. And it really becomes a question of whether this is something that people believe ought to be part of their revenue stream, ought to be part of their entertainment industry or not.
And at least one Massachusetts sports betting company, DraftKings, is preparing to double down. DraftKings CEO Jason Robbins told WBUR this week that Massachusetts would be wise to lead the way.
I think it's a huge advantage for states that are first to jump in because they're going to be the ones that get all the companies like ours to open up new offices, you know, and they'll just be farther along than everyone else. And the faster they get in, the faster the tax revenue will be generated. And then I also think states like Massachusetts, hopefully, and others that move early, they'll really set the stage defining what regulation should look like.
All right, Charlie, I'll start with you. Should Massachusetts sort of jump into this this new industry that's going to be opening up?
No, I don't think so. You know, to me, this is just like casinos. You know, this is a sort of an act of desperation that doesn't bring in as much money as they say, that comes with all kinds of negatives. But, you know, since we don't...
It's sort of irresistible, though, isn't
well,
it, to politicians?
Is,
I mean, you heard Charlie
sure
Baker,
is,
Mr.
Sure
Caution there, sort
it,
of
sure
saying,
is.
You know, it's certainly something we should look at.
Right. And because, you know, because we don't do the things we need to do to raise money in a reasonable way. I mean, I would argue, plenty will disagree with me, that the millionaire's tax is the same thing. I mean, it's a constitutional amendment that would take 3 years to change if it didn't work out. It's got all kinds of unintended consequences, and it's all because we can't do tolls or taxes or the kind of things that would be the smart ways to raise the revenue that we need. So we keep looking for the silver bullet, and the states are not operating from a place of strength when they're doing this, when they're just looking, when they're desperate, looking for any way they can to raise a few million
right.
bucks.
Susan, what do you think?
I think it's inevitable. I don't disagree. You know, it's not my favorite thing. Do I want to raise revenue from sports gambling? I don't. But if every state around us is doing this, to me, it's more like marijuana than it is about casino gambling. It's, and by the way, we will never go for first, despite what the gentleman from DraftKings thinks. He has not watched the legislative process
New Jersey
in Massachusetts.
Is so
right. In we don't ever go quickly on things. There's a lot of deliberation and a lot of voices to be heard here. But I think it's inevitable. You know, again, personally, you know, if it never happened, I'd be fine with that. But I think when you're surrounded, it's going to happen. I don't think the money is, it's from everything I've read, it's pretty, from a tax perspective, it's hardly anything to get too excited about in terms of
a year.
Right. It's you know, wildly insignificant. And I think the devil is going to be in the details on it. You know, what's the tax rate, compulsive gambling, integrity of the game, things
yeah.
like that.
Well, speaking of moving quickly on this legislatively, so House Speaker Robert DeLeo, Senate President Harriet Chandler said this week that the House and Senate could move on legislation before the session is over, but they wouldn't commit to doing it quickly, mainly because they have concerns about the revenue and also about the integrity of the game. So that sounds a little bit like what you were talking about, Susan.
Yeah, I would bet on that it's not going to move quickly.
All right. I'll see your bet and raise you some. So what about, though, the opportunity for corruption? I mean, we've got history in this country going back to the 1919 Black Sox scandal when baseball players got tangled up in the rigging of the outcome of a World Series.
Long history in boxing.
Boxing, scandals at FIFA, pro soccer. I could go on. So, you know, what about protecting the integrity of sports? Or is the horse already out of the barn on this one? What do you think, Charlie?
Well, look, I mean, I agree with Susan. I think as much as I don't like it, I think it is going to happen. Supposedly, the folks who are for it would say that there are new sort of high-tech ways to protect the integrity of the game. You know, I hope it's true because I would only say that, you know, sports is a huge business, needless to say, but it's also, you know, it's for a lot of us, it's just an important part of our lives, you know,
certainly.
And we would just hate to, you know, to have it be like professional wrestling, you know, it's just, we'll see. I have my doubts, but.
Yeah. What do you think, Susan?
I think, you know, from the little bit I've read about what's happening in England, it's interesting to read if you haven't read about it. I mean, they bet throughout the game, you know, what's going to happen in the next half second.
Yeah.
I think from what I've seen is two of the things that have been, that they're starting to clamp down on. One is on advertising and sort of getting people ginned up to just gamble immediately. And there is an implication to compulsive gambling on that. And also on lower tier sports gaming. And that's where some of the integrity of the game issues seem to be coming into play more. So
I'll tell you what, the ratings are going to go up.
Yeah, for everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if it means a comeback for Pete Rose.
Yeah. Right. Hall of Fame. He's coming now.
All right. Well, listen, before we run out of time, I want to wrap up this week in review with our hubbubs, those brief stories or events that caught your attention, but maybe didn't get the above the fold attention that they deserved. Susan, what's your hubbub?
I'm going with Bob Coughlin today over at MassBio. And I think Shirley Leung in today's Globe wrote about it. He's calling them mantles. And those are panels when, you know, he puts together about 100 events a year or is invited to events. And he looks now and says, is there anyone on here other than a man? And, you know, how do we get more women and minorities involved in it? And he is demanding that all of his panels represent that, and he won't participate if they're not. And I think if we're going to change the environment a little bit and create opportunity for more people, I like what he's doing, and I give him a thumbs up.
Thumbs up. All right. That's interesting. Great. Charlie, what's your hubbub?
Well, I'm looking at a different side of humanity here. I got to talk about the royal wedding given this weekend. And
he struck me as a royal wedding kind of guy.
I don't know about that.
Charlie,
I'm sort of shocked, Charlie.
I was reading about this and I just couldn't believe it. The all these tales of Meghan Markle's family were astonishing. Mm-hmm. You know, her father was going to walk her down the aisle, but she got caught. He got caught staging a paparazzi photo shoot, and that didn't go over real well with the royals. So, you know, he's out, and now it turns out that he planned it with Meghan's sister, who also is estranged from Meghan. And now Thomas says he has heart problems and blames it on his son.
Sure.
Because his son apparently penned a handwritten note to Prince Harry, volunteering that Meghan is jaded, shallow, and conceited, and then shared it with a magazine. And not to be outdone, the son's ex-wife, who's also estranged from Meghan, and her sons flew to London to provide commentary on the wedding for some British TV show. Now, it appears that that's not going to happen anymore. But Meghan's nephew, one of the sons, is a licensed medical marijuana farmer in Oregon, where he's selling a special strain of pot called Markle Sparkle.
So it's going to be a heck of a Thanksgiving at the Markles.
Who says the celebrities aren't just like us?
I think this is only good news for the royals. I think this is just going to bring all kinds of good energy into that family. So here's my hubbub. It comes from yesterday's debate among the two Democratic gubernatorial candidates, Bob Massey and Jay Gonzalez. So in a lightning round of lighthearted questions, the debate moderator, our own Meghna Chakrabarty, asked the candidates about sports, including who was their favorite Massachusetts sports stars. Jay Gonzalez, who often makes fun of the fact that he's not exactly tall, went first.
Well, of course, Dustin Pedroia, another man of stature.
And Bob, same question for you.
Karl Yastrzemski, no question about it.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to throw another sports question here. How many points are the Celtics going to beat Cleveland by on Saturday?
I'm going to say 12.
Ooh, tight.
756.
So Gonzalez, Celtics by 12. Massey, Celtics by 756. You know, we've mentioned that there isn't a whole lot of daylight between these two guys politically, but I think we learned who follows sports. Anyway, I like that moment.
And Yastrzemski's going to be hitting the baskets, I
think.
There
we go. Susan Tracy, president of the Democratic Consulting Firm, the Strategy Group. Thank you, Susan, for coming in.
Thanks, Anthony.
And Charlie Chipio, senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute and head of Chipio Strategies. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.